Well, hello everyone. Good morning, good evening and good afternoon. I'm your host, Francesca Pinillo, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Verimed Stories podcast. And today I'm joined by Diana Stewart, who has made a number of appearances on the podcast already, but today we're going to cover the topic of imposter syndrome. We're going to go through what it is, how it manifests and how to overcome it. So Diana, welcome to the podcast. I trust you're doing well today.
Thank you, Francesca. I'm very well.
Good. So I think what we can start off with is maybe not everyone will know exactly what imposter syndrome is. So please, my first question will be, you know, what is imposter syndrome for those people who do not know yet what this lovely, lovely feeling is that we that we feel in our jobs?
Yes, well, it's a psychological phenomenon, and I think it probably affects most people at some point throughout their life. It's something which affects both men and women equally, and so it's not picky about gender.
No.
But it does manifest itself in different ways, I think, between the genders. But essentially, it is something that people feel that they are, I don't know, they have this fear of failure, that they are, that the imposter bit comes like from that. I'm in this job, but I feel like I've infiltrated it, and I'm waiting to be spotted.
Yeah.
But for other people, it might be that they just have a real fear of failure. They are completely in denial of their abilities, or when they get praise, they're very discounting of the praise. They feel fear or guilt about their successes. And for other people, it's this strong urge to feel the best. They need to feel the best. And as I say, you know, between the genders, it can be quite different. Generally, for females, it's performance. It's their sort of self-critique of their performance. And for males, it's that fear of being actually unsuccessful or not quite enough.
Yeah. That seems like inherent just from our biology of being males and females. So it makes sense that that's how it would manifest between the different sexes.
Yeah, definitely. I think females in particular are prone to issues with confidence. There's quite a lot of documentation out there about self-confidence in females. It's something that just seems to be in females. It has been scientifically proven that there's this confidence gap in females, and it's so that's going to contribute to imposter syndrome, because the lack of self-confidence or that gap in confidence.
Yeah.
Definitely gives input to that imposter feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely attest to that feeling.
and it's funny, it manifests itself in different ways throughout our lives. So, I mean, some people it might be fleeting, it might be in a particular role, but it's not just related to work. It can be in other settings, your social settings, for example. Had a very unusual experience recently where, you know, I've been familiar with imposter syndrome in my work life, but I found myself in a group of friends, some of which I've known a long time, some of which I haven't known particularly long, and I thought, I shouldn't be in this group. These people are amazing. I'm not amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where I was thinking, why are they friends with me? So it can manifest itself at different points in our life and in different settings. So
yeah, I think that's really important to mention, because, like, you know, I myself would say throughout uni, I always, like, you know, doing a PhD, I kind of thought, oh my God, why are they letting me do this? They're going to find me out at some point. They're going to know I shouldn't be here. And it's like, well, I've got the evidence to show that I should be here. Like, I have the quantitative evidence. I have my undergrad degree, my master's degree. Like, I absolutely deserve to be here. But you just, there's just that inherent like lack of self-belief and self-confidence. And as you said, like that manifests at work and can also manifest in social situations where, like at uni, you know, kind of friends wise, I've always like with the oddballs, if that makes sense. We're always like quite funky and eccentric. And there's been an odd few times where I've had like girlfriends that are more girly and that sort of thing. And I just feel really weird. And that's, I'm like, oh, like I don't dress like that. And I maybe don't have the same interests and different things. And I just feel like, well, why are they friends with me? Like, why are they not friends with, I don't know, someone that's more like them? But then I think it's obviously the differences that bring you together. But yeah, just as you said, like it's not just work situations where this can rear its ugly head.
No, and I think one of the areas where there's quite a lot of research is where imposter syndrome exists in student populations. And I think that's probably quite natural, really, as you've just described, you know, getting to university, going to study. That in itself is a big step out of most people's comfort zones. And then moving from that academic world into the world of work is quite disruptive as well, emotionally. And so again, you know, we will be, you'll have groups of people. And of course at Verima we have these groups of students who come to us to go through the graduate training program, and potentially quite naturally, people are going to be comparing themselves against each other in that environment, and immediately start thinking, maybe I shouldn't be here. Am I doing well enough? Am I need to be better? I need to push forward.
I
So.
think that's like normal when everyone sort of starts at the same level. You know, you're a stat one, you're a programmer one, and people, it's just, you know, it's natural. People do develop at different rates, but you can't help yourself from comparing, and comparing is just the ultimate thief of joy. Like, it is like one of the worst things that we can do is compare ourselves to other people, but you just cannot help it. And then that ultimately can make you feel worse about the situation. Even though you could be doing amazing, you might just be so blind to it and just not see it. And it's that, again, like that lack of self-confidence belief that doesn't allow you to see how amazing you are.
No, exactly. And potentially, you know, our education doesn't really help us because we are being measured against each other on a fairly consistent basis. And it's not like that in work because you're not doing the same thing. Everybody is working on different things. They're on different projects. They're developing slightly different skill sets. So it's not realistic to compare ourselves against each other's. But yeah, we are doing it, and we do it. It continues where we go through life, and we think we compare ourselves to our friends. We can compare ourselves even in terms of material possessions, all sorts of things where we're constantly comparing ourselves. And it takes quite a lot of effort to bring ourselves back and think about what is actually really important. And I suppose when we're in our work setting, that's why we have good support mechanisms around people to assist with that.
Definitely. I think one of the things that I know definitely has helped me in the last few years, like since being at Verimed and with the client that I'm with, is that like our boss of the team, she's quite open about being in, you know, a relatively high position. She's on the leadership team and she speaks about imposter syndrome. And like, I remember the first time that she spoke about this, I was like, but you're like her fearless leader. How, I just could not fathom, because I see her as so confident and just all knowing and like amazing at what she does. I was shocked that she indeed had these feelings as well. So I think it definitely helps that it's a topic that people do speak about, especially for like more junior members of staff to hear that the senior members in your team possibly do feel the same way or have felt like that in the past and can therefore support you. So I think, like, my question to you, if you could give us a little insight into maybe different points in your career where you've had these feelings and off the back of that, how to overcome them.
Yes, I think because I've had a bit of a strange career path, I've always accepted that this was always a bit of an outlier, I suppose. So there wasn't so much the temptation to compare myself with others for that very reason. But I think it was almost because I didn't have the support of qualifications in the same way. I have different types of qualifications. And so I would be feeling inadequate, even though I was doing the same job, I was performing in the same way and getting the same work done. It's almost like I've got in via the back door, I've snuck in and nobody has spotted me. Like I've somehow got into a very nice nightclub and somebody's going to check me out. but yeah, so it sort of existed, I would say, probably for the last 25 years since I've been working in this area, and it comes and goes. There are other times where I've got better at recognizing my achievements, and then it tends to manifest itself more as when we go into a role where maybe there's less structure in it and there's more ability, and there's more development for yourself. And I think in the past, I've been quite hard on myself because I've doubted my own abilities. I've felt that I haven't been maximizing the opportunities that I've been presented with. And whereas as I've progressed, that has gone away a bit, and it's been because I've been able to reflect more on some of my achievements and the things that you have achieved. And there's been a significant move away from perfectionism, which is actually something that drives a lot of imposter syndrome, this feeling that everything we must do should be perfect.
Yeah.
It seems to naturally exist with statisticians and programmers, perfectionism, because we're always striving for this quality in everything we produce. And it's a shame that actually it spreads almost into every other area of our what we do.
Sorry to interrupt, do you think that's because of the type, obviously the type of work that we do, but at like the foundations, say mathematics, you know, where there's usually an answer and that's the right one, and there's either a right or a wrong answer. Like, it is quite black and white a lot of the time when you study mathematics. Do you think that's maybe like a precedent, or as to maybe why we're drawn to that subject? Because yes, that's the answer. No, that's not the answer. There's no ambiguity with what comes out of that calculation. Whereas maybe something like English literature is very, very subjective. So I don't know if maybe, like, just with your experience, do you think that would play a role in that?
I think it definitely plays a role. I think that's something I'm a very logical individual. That was the reason that I studied maths, was because it wasn't subjective. You got an answer. And also because you could work through things logically and you could see how you got to that conclusion. And there is definitely an inclination for people to be quite binary, even in all sorts of things. Tasks that we undertake, like line management, that require more people skills, we need to be a little bit less literal. We need to probably understand the blurriness a bit more. But as very technical individuals, we do tend to approach these things as with a binary mind, say it's either one or another, but it isn't. And so, and perfectionism is a bit, it does kind of lead into that, because we're kind of either it's right or it's wrong. And we're not very good with good enough. Now, when we're talking about clinical trials, we don't really deal with good enough. But when we're dealing with our performance and other people's performance, it's more about are those individuals striving for excellence, or are they pursuing rather unhealthily perfectionism? Because the difference is that I've really tried for excellence here. I'm really striving to do the best I can in the circumstances in which I'm operating. And perfectionism is saying, but that's still not good enough because you didn't get it exactly right, or there was that tiny thing that wasn't wrong. And you're not able to reflect back and be able to say, well, does it matter? The fact that I didn't do those last two things that make it perfect, does it matter? And that you need to be able to do that. And that sort of way of beginning to look at things helps with imposter syndrome, because then you can actually view your achievements with a healthier point of view, I would say.
Yeah, and just picking up on what you said, like about the line management, and I think this goes hand in hand with the graduate intakes that we have as well, is that like as line managers, we're not like laying down the path, but we're preparing them to set on their career and to be that beacon for them and that outlet to show them that like it's normal to feel like this, but you are doing absolutely fine. If there is room for development, we will, of course, work on that. We will find things, give you these opportunities to help you work on, you know, whatever that may be. But you are on, like, the right path. Is that something that, because I know you deal with a lot of the line management, and especially as the grads, when they come in to Verimed, like, I feel like you would have a really interesting point of view on that.
Yes, I think people... they are hard on themselves, and they look to their line managers for guidance. And as you quite rightly say, line managers are there to prepare them for this path. And sometimes they are possibly pushing for sort of a thing, a slightly different direction. Oh, well, if I go on this training course, then I will be able to perform this task perfectly. If I have a bit more training, if I do to get a bit more guidance, rather than really almost it's that mentoring relationship with line management that helps develop the individual, and listening, both sides listening to what people are saying. And of course, if line managers relate their own experiences as well, that's helpful, rather than presenting perfect to your line reports, showing those flaws is helpful to them as well. So
No, I would completely agree with that. I know, like, when my line report comes to me, and a lot of the time I will say, well, this has happened to me before, and you know, it may not feel great if, you know, something's late or, you know, whatever it may be, but this is how I dealt with it. Maybe, you know, you can take something away from that that's more aligned to your personality and how you do things, or maybe you just need some inspiration and some guidance. Now, I feel like I'm stealing your words here, because I noted this down when we had like our initial conversation, but one thing that stood out from what you said was, let's strive for excellence instead. Now, I've not finished the sentence because I can't remember what we spoke about at the time, but I'm guessing that was, let's strive for excellence instead of perfection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's important. It's important to understand the difference. And it's, I think, as I say, I feel like perfectionism is definitely the is a big part of imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
In whether that is being good enough is part of it. But if we talk about those, what the male side, which is really the successfulness of themselves,
yeah.
Perfect is this perfect line of a career being perfectly successful. So the perfectionism is still creeping in there, that they sometimes make a plan for themselves, this perfect plan that people want to move along, and if it's not happening in the way that they expect, then they're very hard on themselves, and this, you know, that's also part of imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I think this segues nicely onto now what we can finish off the episode with is how, like, do you have any useful strategies for how to overcome these feelings?
So, yes, I do. I should firstly point out, obviously, I'm not a psychologist, and I think if somebody is experiencing fairly serious imposter syndrome, it might, and it's not something that is, with some of these strategies I'm about to talk about, you know, it's not really happening. The chances are you're going to have to go and talk to a therapist. Talk therapy is always a very positive thing for people, and because in extreme cases, you know, it can lead to anxiety and depression, and so we obviously don't want that to happen to people. But I think probably the most important thing for me is actually hearing the other people experiencing. I wasn't alone. Other people are out there, they have it as well, and I've been very fortunate. I've had some very good line managers who have shared their experiences where I have recognized that they themselves have experienced imposter syndrome, and just talking to others generally does help. And as we mentioned, you know, when graduates come into an organization, when graduates come into our organization, we make sure they're supported. So we assign them buddies and mentors. That's an important step for heading off imposter syndrome, because mm-hmm. those individuals can share their own experiences as well. I think going down the path of self-awareness is helpful. And I think that probably was a bit of a game changer for me in the last 5 years, where not being afraid to have better self-awareness of who I am and how I operate in the world, what motivates me, what I can feel proud of, and what I can actually almost have put concrete evidence towards that I can feel proud of. And more recently I've done the I Am Be Yourself at Work assessment, that just sort of has built on that as well. That's really helped me, and the Clifton Strengths assessment as well, that highlights, you know, what are you good at? What are your strengths? And I find that very helpful, actually. And then engaging with the performance management process in any organization is good, because you reflect on what you've achieved throughout the year, and you can actually say, yeah, do you know what? That went well, or I feel proud of that, and own it. For some people, this is a bit of an uncomfortable process, and that's part of the imposter syndrome. Yeah, I did do that, but, you know, I had a lot of help. Or, I did.
Yeah,
do
you
that.
Always, like, undermine it somehow, don't you?
And actually saying, almost stopping yourself from saying that, it's a very natural thing, but then I sound boastful. But actually trying to get past that a bit and just say, but actually, or if you can say, yeah, I did do that, I did have a lot of help, but I did do that, and I am proud of it, is a good step as well. So really owning your successes, owning your achievements, I think is important, and using your logic, if you're a logical individual like I am, is to actually see those things in proper reality rather than yeah, pretending they didn't really happen. So a logical approach has really helped me.
So I've also stolen a few of our Jamboard. I think we had a imposter syndrome like workshop training a few weeks ago, and I was like, oh, this is going to be perfect for the episode that we're going to record. So the question was like, what strategies do you have for managing imposter syndrome? And I think this is more from like a line management perspective. So like what I'd kind of screenshotted was like, if your line report's coming to you and, you know, talking about these things, a few people had said like remind them that they wouldn't be in the role if Verimed didn't think they could do it. So like, we know you've got the skills, like we believe in you, you can definitely do the thing. Then encourage them to do things outside their comfort zone whilst offering the support and guidance to be able to do it. So I think that's a really great tip as well. And then one that I really liked was highlighting achievements that they have overlooked. You know, it may be a small thing that you've done, but like you saved time, like you created an efficiency, you helped someone out. Like that is an amazing thing to do. So I think it's important to like give that good feedback and make them feel good about themselves as well. And I think that just helps build up little by little that confidence and that like self-esteem and self-belief as well.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Yeah.
Yep. Well, do you have any last statements, any last thing that you want to give to the world before we end the episode?
No, well, I always say no and then say something. No, yes. I think the most important thing is that you're not alone. If you've got imposter syndrome, you're not alone. And if you do a Google search, you will see people like Michelle Obama will come up as having talked about having imposter syndrome. There's some heavyweight names out there of people who have experienced imposter syndrome. And if you look at the Wikipedia page, it will tell you that 70% of people experience imposter syndrome. I actually think it's probably a much higher percentage than that, because I think it's actually something that affects most people, almost everyone, in some way at some point in their lives. So really, the takeaway is you're not alone, and there are ways to address it and get past it. And by getting past it, it means that you can engage better with your life in, you know, those particular aspects in which it's affecting, whether that be work or social. So,
yeah. Well, I think that's a really good way to end the podcast. So thank you all very much for listening. If you would like to be notified for any future episodes, please subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whichever podcast platform you're using. If you'd like to know more about Verimed, please visit our website at verimed.co.uk, or you can find us on LinkedIn. If you've got any questions about Verimed, please feel free to reach out to myself on LinkedIn. Always happy to help. And if you've got any questions on the topic that we've covered today, again, feel free to reach out to myself or Diana. You can also find us on YouTube and Instagram at We Are Verimed. So thank you all very, very much for listening. And until next time, see you later.